Dr. James Payne is the author of the book called The Big Government We Love to Hate. He has taught at Yale, at Johns Hopkins, and at Texas A&M. He's the author of 21 books, including this new one. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Dr. Payne, it's good to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Jerry.
Why don't you tell us about, since we know how big government is now, actually we probably don't even realize the full extent of it, but what are your thoughts in terms of the founders of America and what they envisioned about the size of and scope of government?
Yes, that's a very good question. I have a somewhat unusual position on this. The usual position is that they saw and believed in small government, and therefore what has happened is a kind of transgression of their image.
Can you speak closer to the microphone there, if you would?
Oh, sure. Sorry.
That's all right.
So anyway, that they were believers in small government. The fact is that governments in general were small simply because rulers couldn't know about and control faraway things.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a flood in Georgia, you wouldn't know even that there was a flood for 3 or 4 months later because somebody, no TV and so forth.
Sure.
So that the idea that there was a problem to be solved didn't even arise. If however, you change your perspective here and say, when there is a problem, can government solve it? Then the founding fathers were pretty much like the present-day Americans. Their answer was, yes, anything we notice as a problem, government should address and solve. By the way, George, I have a section in my book called George Washington, Father of Big Government. And I go into his documents and even his address to Congress, in which he lists all kinds of things that he suggests government should do, Congress should do. They didn't have the money for it. He had things like he wanted a national university, a federal government national university. That was proposed by George Washington, government in higher education. And he wanted all kinds of boards, scientific boards, to promote and fund research and so forth. Say, Congress didn't do it because they didn't have money, and it wasn't talked about as a crisis issue. But George Washington had an underlying faith that whatever he had in mind, government would do and do correctly and so on.
Well, as far as the university that you mentioned, would that be the beginnings of the American University or perhaps even the beginnings of George Washington University, both of which are in D.C.?
No. This was to be a federally funded, tax-funded, and federally government-run.
Oh, then university. Maybe it would be the Washington Community College. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
but
yeah,
it was kind of like that, yeah.
That's a good example of it wasn't like there weren't any universities. There were lots at that time, William and Mary and so forth, Harvard. And so it wasn't that these couldn't be supplied privately, voluntarily. It's just George Washington had the idea, which I say he shares with almost all Americans, that any idea you have in mind, something that you think needs to be done, can be done, you just say, well, let government do it. And you don't stop to think about, hey, maybe this will go wrong, maybe this will have inefficiencies and so on.
You know, there's a lot of people today in modern America that will poo-poo the founding fathers and, you know, disagree with them, and then they'll just dismiss them, like George Washington. Oh, well, what does he know, and why should we listen to him? He owned slaves. And they'll discount the fact that, you know, he did free his slaves, albeit at his death, but he did free them. He stopped the cycle after four generations of owning slaves. But what are your thoughts about that, the kind of the anti-founding sentiment that we find among so many young people today? And they're the future, unfortunately.
Right. Yes, that is puzzling. I think on many of these media things, you get trends in something. trends against this, trends against that, things you don't think about for generations, and all of a sudden they come up and they're trends. And I think that's what's happening. It is true that the founding fathers have been deified, it would be the word, and look at those gigantic marble monuments that were built to them, like we are supposed to worship them. And I could understand a person, once you got over this feeling of loyalty, being a little bit irritated, or a lot irritated, that they have been put so high on a pedestal.
Yeah, I remember Dr. Donald S. Lutz, who I really appreciate him, retired now from the University of Houston, but he and I were once in a discussion, and he said, you know, I never capitalize FF, the founding fathers. I never capitalize them because they were just men like we are. And ever since he said that, I thought, you know, that's exactly right. We should not capitalize them. But they were great men. I mean, I agree with the sentiment of William Gladstone of Great Britain, a century after the Constitution was written, and he made a remark about how the Constitution was just such a great document, and it was a great assembly of men that gave us that document in God's providence, in my humble opinion, and many others.
So.
People.
I mean, relative to the assemblies of men here and there around the world, right, I think they were admirable.
So when you talk about the big government we love to hate, what does the second part of your title mean, we love to hate?
That it's something, one way to put it, is it's like an obsessive-compulsive disorder where, on the one hand, you're saying a lot of things bad about this. And that this, by the way, has come up just in the last 20, 30 years. I call it failureism, and the books on this started in the 1990s. There are about 25 of them now, in which the thrust of them is that government isn't working. It isn't working right, and so forth. So that's come in, the disappointment with government. But the surprising thing is that my book tries to unravel, is that these people that are criticizing government, and this is really the mainstream view, that we don't like what government is, but that we still keep looking to it for the answers to our problems. And that's the kind of irrationality of it. It's like an obsessive-compulsive disorder.
Hmm. That reminds me of the old Woody Allen joke where in one of his movies he says this to his psychologist, my sister thinks she's a chicken. Oh, well, why don't you try and talk her out of it? I would, but I need the eggs. There's sort of this feeling that, you know, well, big government's bad, but let me get my share in this.
Well, right. Again, going back to George Washington, you can point to that this or that policy is not a good idea. But if you have your own policy, the thing you want, and you think it's a good idea, then you assume, without analyzing it, that government will carry it out and it'll be all happening. You just sort of snap your fingers. And the idea of that government is this huge aggregation of fallible human beings stumbling along decade after decade, this seems to get forgotten.
Now, one thing about the founders, they, at the time that they, you know, gave us the Declaration of Independence and they gave us the Constitution, they did say when future territories become future states that there should be a kind of a template that they follow, and this is called the Northwest Ordinance. And one of the things they talked about there is education. But listen to what they said and contrast that with what's happening today. They said in the Northwest Ordinance, religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary for good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged. Okay, today, here we are all these years later, and religion and morality are, you know, forbidden in the schools, especially, you know, Christianity in any way are forbidden in the schools. And so the very principle that the founders said as far as education is being violated today, when it's really, you know, I find it amazing because the Bible is the reason schools and education, you know, education for the masses was created in the first place in America.
Yes, yes. Well, but you're right that they believed in what we today call public education. But I would say I don't think they thought ahead. For instance, take Christianity. You're making the assumption that they were making the assumption that Christianity would entirely rule, control, enforce thinking in these schools. Well, if the culture evolves and we have Jews and Muslims and so on and different Christian denominations competing against each other, so that there's going to be a lot of conflict and disagreement, the idea of a single church school for the entire nation dictating thinking becomes very, very unrealistic, and you're left with the kind of mess of public schools that we have today, which I guess most everybody is disappointed in.
Well, I would say that, you know, in giving us the First Amendment, they were very clear that they didn't want any one denomination to lord it over the others. You know, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment right. of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Today, there's all kinds of stories, you know, all kinds of instances where the free exercise of religion is being taken away from Christian kids. I mean, there's just, you know, the founder of this radio station, the ultimate founder, Dr. D. James Kennedy, helped co-found something called the Alliance Defending Freedom, where they're basically in the courts of the land fighting for religious liberty. I think the ultimate answer to all this would have to be school choice in the long run. But, you know, let the parents
get away from tax-funded, tax-regulated education. Sure.
Yeah.
But that's not what the founders believed. The founders believed in tax-funded education. They thought it would work out okay. They didn't look into the future enough.
Hmm. All right. Yeah. What are your thoughts about welfare policy and the founders?
Yeah, I would say you don't start getting government into welfare until you get a mass media that starts voicing and announcing a concern for the poor, you know, as an immediate or daily concern. And you didn't, in the time of Father, you didn't have daily newspapers, you know. They didn't come in until, about 1830, 1850 with the Rotary Press. So the issues that, by the way, gave rise to the modern Marxism, socialism, and so forth, these didn't exist there, this concern with inequality, the perception that there are wealthy and that there are poor and the poor are suffering because of the wealthy. Those issues just didn't exist in 1790 as public issues. Hmm. So the welfare state, the idea that government should use its force to march in here and take away from the rich and give to the poor, that didn't start coming in actually until after 1850 or so. And, of course, it's the modern socialist gospel. But, again, it assumes that government is a rational, responsible, effective problem-solving agency. And that has to be questioned. I've done a book on welfare, and each welfare program you look at, it turns out, if you look carefully and at length, to be dysfunctional. They're making the problem worse.
Okay, we're basically out of time. Is there a website for your books and so forth?
Yes. In fact, well, Litton, L-Y-T-T-O-N, Publishing Company, has got one. And there's one called The Government Love to Hate also that's connected to that.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Jerry.
Sure.
Great speaking with you.